Welcome to the Real Estate Dads podcast. We've got Jeremy B. Hill, JB, who is a career entrepreneur, father of three, and has got some fantastic stories about being a dad, having businesses that have gone well, some businesses not so much, and some businesses that have really been home runs. So, Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to see you.
Jeremy is the CEO, founder of JB Capital, and JB Capital has been around for how long?
We're now 22 and a half, almost about 23 years, I guess.
23 years. Yeah. And before that, where were you?
I was a model and actor. No, right. I wasn't. No, not at all.
I wouldn't have been surprised.
Currently unemployed. No. I've kind of always been an entrepreneur, right? Yeah. You know, good and bad. I mean, mostly that means it is that you're unemployable. Nobody else will hire you, so I guess you're an entrepreneur, right? But I've always kind of thought differently-ish. Mm-hmm. Went to school and that kind of a thing. And had aspirations there. But ultimately, when my wife and I got together and we got married, I knew that I wanted to do something different. So we started a couple of little businesses, and most of them were crap, and a couple of them did okay. And then ultimately ended up starting what became JB Capital, kind of the middle to end of 2002, kind of by happy accident. And it's, you know, been running and growing and changing and trying to do good things since.
Great, great, great. So, and then within JB Capital, Real Estate Dads, tell us about your kids.
I got cool kids. I got great kids. So we've got three. So 23, 20, and 17. So my wife and I have our 28th wedding anniversary next month. Totally outkicked my coverage. Like, she's a smoke show, dude. Like, awesome. Insert a picture somewhere. She's hot, right? But then I have three kids, 23, 20, and 17. So boy, girl, boy. Eldest is Joshua. Okay. And then my daughter is Kaylin, who's 20. And then my youngest son, Tristan, is 17. So great kids.
And so when we started your business, you know, one of the things we like to kind of get, you know, figured out, what were the milestones for the kids or the milestones in your business, and how are you balancing those things?
The milestones for the business were, you know, initially, is this thing going to work, right? I mean, everybody has a milestone of, I want to make 100 grand or $1 million or $10 million or whatever it is. I wasn't that smart. I mean, it was really a defensive position of, what am I going to do with myself? It is. And what am I going to do with my business? It's going to hopefully kind of take care of my family, feed my family, allow me to be me, whatever that is, that's continuing to evolve. And hopefully that proves to be something it is that you can grow over time. So I don't know if I necessarily had milestones. Looking back, you got milestones. Oh, this worked. That worked. We did this. That was fun. That was good. That was good. Then we poured gas on that. But I don't think that there was ever something it is that was at the time that we started was a 20-year plan saying we're going to leap tall buildings in single bound. It was, what the fuck are we going to do now? Let's hope that this works. Let's hope that we make money. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get an I told you so from my friends or my parents because they dropped out of school or like these kind of things. I don't want to listen to that. And that at the time early on was motivation enough. It is to just put your head down and work until you figured it out. Milestones for the kids, I guess, now kind of watching and seeing, looking back, are dad's kind of cool. You know, I don't think it's a milestone necessarily that, you know, they saw us build a big house and build a big office and have lots of people and make lots of money. Because your kids kind of care about that and kind of don't give a shit, right? Like the kids it is that you've seen, it is that their parents have a big business and a big house, but they have no relationship with their dad because he's always gone and mom's got a pool boy and dad's got a girlfriend. Like, what fucking milestone is that? You know what that? Like, the cool things now it is that I think become milestones it is for me as a father and as a dad and us as a family is our house is the house. Like, and what I mean by that is our house is the house to where it is that my kids and all my kids' friends feel safe.
Yeah, right? That's my life.
I totally agree.
It, my wife is, somehow this came, and I don't know how it came. My wife is Mama Hill. It's all of my daughter's friends, when they come over, when they can't talk to their mom, they talk to Mama Hill.
Oh, wow.
And my older sons and my younger sons, when their girlfriends it is, would come over, the first thing that they would do is come in and give my wife a hug and kiss. And so the milestones I think it is for us there as a family is creating that kind of environment to where it is that your kids want to be with you. And I think we see a lot of this now to where it is that kids can't wait to get out of the house. God, I can't wait to move across country and go to school and get a job or do whatever it is because their parents are a pain in the ass. I get messages from like these kids, it is that we've seen that have been my son's friends that, you know, I've known since they were 10 years old because I traveled the country playing soccer together or doing whatever. And we've been all over the country, all over the world for these guys doing this kind of stuff. And now that these kids are graduating college, they're calling saying, "Hey, Mr. Hill or Jeremy, can we talk? Can we have lunch? Can we have this? I got a job offer in New York. What do you think I should do? My dad's wanting me to do this. I don't want to do this. How do I tell him this stuff?" And so it becomes this kind of counseling and mentoring relationship it is that you have with these kids, and that comes off of LinkedIn and it comes off of your kids' networks and this kind of a thing. And so those, if anything, if there's dad milestones with your kids or something like that, those are have been pretty good ones.
That's great. There's that much trust to reach out to both you and your wife.
So how did you make your house the house? Like what was what are the main, you know, things?
You know, that's a great question. So my wife and I get asked that a lot. Like, you guys are awesome kids. Like, do you feed them something different? is there some weirdo supplement? You know, we got to be given. Like, what do you do? And the answer is, I don't know. I mean, one of the things that is that we've always done is that we've kind of breathed life into our kids for what it is that they want to do. Like, if you want to play soccer, you want to play football, you want to try out for a play, you want to do whatever it is that you want to do, awesome. Like, we're going to do that. But if you're going to do it, you're going all in. Like, we're not half-assed. We're not going to try anything. You're going to go all out. And if you decide after the first season or the first play or the first whatever it is that you're trying to do that you don't want to do that, that's okay. But while you're there, it's 100%. The other thing it is that we did is we, if my son's doing something, all of us show up to support what it is that he's doing, right? So if Joshua's got a game, the four of us go to the game. If Tristan's got it, whatever, we all go. It's not your brother has a game. Oh, how did he do? Well, you're going to know how he does because your ass is going to be there with us. And all of us cheer for you. And when my daughter did theater for a little bit, the two things it is that we had for theater is, God, what a bunch of fucking theater nerds. Don't invite these guys over to our house, right? But my daughter's just such a wonderful spirit. It is. It was like, okay, we're going to her play again, right? We're going to the play, but all of us are going and we're going to clap and we're going to cheer and we're going to do whatever it is because it's her and my daughter. And we should support her. Absolutely. And you should support her. And so should you and that kind of thing. And my son jokes with me. My eldest son, Joshua, jokes with me because I remember going to this. We're driving down the hill from our house when we were in Woodinville in Seattle. And he goes, "Dad, hey, I got this new music. It is. I want you to listen to it." And I was like, "Cool, man. Put it on. You know, whatever we're listening to." And we're touring down the hill, going to soccer practice. And he puts on some freaking rap music of some kind or whatever it is. And I was like, "Oh, yeah, cool. Listen to whatever it is that you want." And I was like, "Who is this guy?" And he goes, "This is G-Eazy." And I was like, "G-Eazy? Fucking dumbass name. Like, what shit are you listening to, man? Like, listen to some Tony Robbins. G-Eazy. Shit." And like 3 or 4 months later, it somehow, because all of our iTunes and everything are connected, so we have all of our family stuff, it is together. Somehow it came up when I was in the car and my son wasn't there. And I was like, man, this is hot, dude. And Joshua gets back in the car and he goes, "What are you listening to?" I was like, G-Eazy. And he goes, "You were just giving me shit about this, whatever it is." I was like, "No, man, this is live. I like this." So I think it's a lot of just not always treating your kids like kids, but treating your kids like people and making sure that entire family is, you know, kind of behind each other's back. Like we always talk about kind of mafia mentality in our house, right? Mm. Like we're all there 100% all the time for all of us. And if somebody hurts one of us, we're all going to kill them. You know, it just, I don't know. It's always been like that.
It's always focused on the family.
Totally.
What happens if, two kids, one has a play, one has a game. So, I mean, that had to have happened, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Divide and conquer?
Divide and conquer. I mean, there was time because of circumstance and the kids' ages when we were in Seattle, it is that we had 3 different kids at 3 different schools. And that was just a nightmare. And it just, because of how all of our kids went to private school all the way up through high school, and then they went to public high school. But at the times it is that they were growing, we were going, because of their ages, they were kind of 3 years apart, that it was a divide and conquer, just crazy. I mean, you can't, the reality is that you want to strive for perfection, but perfection is impossible. So it's, you have this thing of excellence is the standard, but grace is the word. We're going to do the best it is that we can, but we're also going to realize that we're human and like sometimes it should just happen. Right.
Yeah. So why'd you make that decision? Just switch from private to public in high school.
Everybody, I think, wants to protect their kids, right? You want to insulate them and protect them and bubble wrap them, you know, as they're growing up as much as you can. I think, and having daughters, because I've got boy, girl, boy, having a daughter even amplifies that. Like, I want to put a chip in her neck if she'd let me, right? You know, when she's sleeping, right? Like, just please be safe. But a lot of the things that is that we witnessed in private school is that at some point we felt like we were beginning to do our kids a disservice by insulating them against the realities of the world. Because not everybody in the world shows up to school in a freaking Rover and has a house with a basketball hoop, and not everybody is a bunch of, you know, middle America, you know, fucking rich kids or something, right? And that even though I wanted that kind of growing up a little bit more structured private school Christian education it is for our kids, at some point you need to be around things it is that are not such a plain vanilla white box, because if we did that through high school and then we sent them off to college, they would be ill prepared, right? You need to walk into the bathroom and somebody's smoking a joint. You need to go into something it is, and you got, you know, two girls and a guy and a, you know, a chimp walking down the hall holding hands with trailer hitches in their face or something, right? Like, that didn't always happen at, you know, your local little Christian school, and you need to be exposed to that. And so we wanted to give them exposure to that while we still could influence or counsel or coach or talk about it at home.
And how early did a lot of that, I'll call it, just like, I mean, because this is the real question I think all of us have. Yeah. Like, when do we talk to our kids about drugs? When do we talk to our kids about these things? Because, you know, you put them in
public
school.
Earlier than you think.
Yeah, so I guess, so tell us about that.
Your kids are smarter than you think they are. They're more exposed to stuff it is than you think they are. And candidly, your kids can kind of handle it. I think it is that we move into this world to where it is that we don't want to expose our kids to something. But if your kid has a phone, he's being exposed to it. Like, I mean, they talk about kids are starting to get exposed to porn and to drugs and stuff like this over their phone in one mechanism or another, like second grade. How old are you in second grade? Like 7, 8?
Yeah. 7.7.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like at 8 years old?
Attractive when I was in second grade.
What's that?
I found girls attractive when I was in second grade.
You're waking up. I mean, you're waking up. You're all of a sudden, you're starting to pay attention to the world, you know, and
yeah,
guidance.
But when I was in first or second grade, like you knew who the pretty girl was in class, but I wasn't thinking about her, you know, naked twister or something.
I haven't figured that out yet. But,
no, you're not. And like now we're kind of moving that way. And then seeing too what it is that's being brought into school because of the kind of the books and the exposure it is that you're handing there, what's happening in the libraries, how it is that we're trying to sanitize and make everything acceptable and okay and stuff that is not right. So if that's going on or they're being exposed to that, even the smallest degree, like parents need to be the influence of this. And I think that's a challenge it is that we're having. So if we're talking about kind of real dads need to be a little bit more real and not expected as somebody else to teach your kids that. Because I want my kids having my values, not their school's values or your teacher's value or your coach value or whoever it is that you're spending time with. My wife and I should be the biggest influence in my kid's life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's when I was a kid, you know, the teachers we had no context on what their home lives were.
No,
I didn't.
No context on what?
No context on what their home lives were. I didn't think about my teachers being married. The fact that they had a life outside of classroom. I remember the first time I heard of a teacher who was married, and I remember it was kind of like, oh wow,
you don't just live here.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you know, and you know, and now you know, you hear these.
We didn't know our teacher's first name. It was Mrs. So and So or Mr. So and So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were John or whatever it is. Like,
they go home to their little cottage. They grade our paperwork. Yeah,
they grade all your paperwork and whittle wood and show up the next morning or something. You know.
Yeah, things have changed. Yeah, massively. Yeah. And was any part of this? You moved from Seattle down here. Mm-hmm. How is each environment? Seattle's known as such a liberal environment.
Yes. I mean, it is. I think the the things in Seattle it is because Seattle has been known as the evergreen city, right? You know, it's that evergreen, or not evergreen city, excuse me, the Emerald City, right? Because you have the evergreens and the ocean and the water and the mountains and everything, and it's a beautiful place. The challenge is a lot of that kind of greenery of the Emerald City is has moved from the Emerald City to kind of mold and, mm-hmm. you know, like the beautiful things about going downtown have kind of gone. Like through COVID and kind of post-COVID and through all the kind of, you know, social stuff it is that's been going on in the world, a lot of the downtown Seattle is certainly one of them. It is that you've kind of taken the love and the joy and the experience of going downtown and going to restaurants and art, you know, art galleries and museums and going to Pike Place Market and doing all this. People don't do that, or we didn't do that anymore because it just wasn't an environment I wanted my kids to be around, or my wife to be around, or even me to be around, right?
It's deteriorated the downtown
significantly. Yeah. I mean, there's murders happening like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. I have probably a dozen friends that are or have been and now retired longtime Seattle PD guys. They can't hire officers fast enough. They've had I think the number was 700 or 750 officers it is that have left or taken early retirement and just said, hey, I've had enough of this kind of a thing. And nobody wants to do that. They can't hire back. So Seattle is one of the two cities, including Chicago, it is, that is now past the fact it is that you can hire illegal aliens or undocumented, whatever the bullshit is that you're supposed to say, basically illegal aliens, it is to come and now become a police officer and give them a gun and enforce laws for a country you're not a citizen of. And I'm like, and they're doing that defensively because crime is still happening. They've basically become kind of catch and release. And so it's to the point now to where these officers are like, I don't want to arrest the guy because he's going to be out in 2 hours. So I'm going to go arrest this dude. He's going to be in my car. He's going to lose his shit. He could stab me. He could this. He could this. He could this. And it'll be out in 2 hours. Like, yeah. What's the point?
It's a really big question. What a lot of these cities who have so many of these policies where their downtowns are dying and how they're going to be able to create enough tax income to actually generate enough money to even hire police. I never lived in San Francisco. I'm sorry. I never lived in Seattle, but I live in San Francisco.
Mm.
And the major retailers in San Francisco are gone.
Yeah.
And the crime is through the roof. Mm-hmm. And the city is going, hey, we need to bring back the retailers. But why would any retailer go to the city when crime is through the roof? How are they? And then there's, well, now we need to create enough money somehow to fix the crime issue. And I'm not really sure they are. I mean, when I say that, I mean, I'm saying this kind of like
trying different things, random stuff. They got like these retired police program. They wear like yellow shirts or something. And they're just observing report and trying to, like,
it's ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole of the liberal cities, but you know, my heart goes out to individuals that are homeless or living on the street, you know, and it does. And, you know, and I really would love to figure out a way to assist these individuals, but, you know, but I get really upset when I hear about, you know, programs that really encourage drug use, needle exchanges, whatever these programs are that allow these.
And Seattle has there's a place in Seattle that is to where it's basically, you know, Amsterdam. Babylon, right? You know, I mean, here is this area in Seattle it is, do whatever you, and literally like the police come in, you know, whatever it is, once a week, whatever it is, and just take bodies and take, okay, great. And you're like, okay, so this is just free for all sex, drugs, rock and roll, whatever it is that you want to do. You can do whatever it is that you want there, heroin, meth, this, that, and the other thing, and they've decriminalized everything. They don't even arrest you. I'm like, like we continue to enable bad behavior. There's no repercussions for it. There's no responsibility for it. And then we wonder why it is that it continues. Like, Jeremy, this is a simple problem.
Why are you such an extremist?
I know. My God, I'm sorry.
So
was that the impetus to move here to Phoenix? Or
no, I mean, a little bit. The reality was is that I had been wanting to kind of have a change of scenery, change of environment for probably 3 or 4 years. My wife wasn't ready. Her folks are still there. And then my eldest son, Joshua, decided that he was going to transfer schools. And so he was playing soccer for college up in Washington, decided it is like everything hurts. You know, I think I'm ready to get my grown up on, and applied to a bunch of business schools, got into all the business schools that he wanted, and ultimately decided he wanted to go to W.P. Carey, which is a business school at ASU. It was top 25 business school, got a good reputation. He liked the environment, liked the campus. And so he moved down here a year ahead of us, had a great time enjoying it. We had a bunch of friends down here. We had a portfolio company down here. And so my wife and I were down here about every 6 weeks anyways. And then, so when my daughter graduated high school, she applied to a bunch of business schools, decided, well, what am I going to do? we were coming down here, and she was down to two or three different schools, and she decided on ASU to go to business school at Cary as well. And so now my wife is like, okay, well, we got two of our three kids down there. We're down there kind of often anyways. Like, honey, do you think we should maybe consider Arizona? Like, I had a sign in the yard in like 11 minutes. Like, I was like, yeah, baby, yeah. Let's go. Because it was time for a change. And, you know, as parents and as you know, you want to be around your kids as long as they'll let you, mm-hmm. right? And so having our home there, but having our kids away, we had just a few years before just built a big custom home and kind of the dream home, we're going to be here forever kind of a thing. And knowing it is that your kids are going to be gone, the house got bigger and emptier and quieter really quick. And, you know, I think sometimes as dads, you don't recognize the weight of that because you're busy trying to, you know, get to the top of the mountain, do all the things it is trying to do. For your wife, however, though, it gets, that quiet gets loud real quick when nobody's home. And so the primary reason for us coming down here is I think it's a better, you know, overall climate for our family. It's a better business climate. We're closer to our kids. And so, you know, now, even though our kids are in university, you know, we see them once or twice a week. We meet every Sunday, go to church. We always go out to brunch afterwards. So my wife gets that time with her kids and us as a kind of a whole family unit every Sunday. And that's been super cool.
And you had your first son at 26.
Yeah. So he was born in 01. So yeah, I was just 26 and 2 months or so. Yeah.
And you started a business a year later.
Yeah. Well, I'd started a couple of shitty ones before that. So
yeah.
But yeah, JB Capital. So he was born in 01 and yeah, defensively in 02. So, you know, my wife and I had started a couple of businesses earlier on. Yeah, go.
I hate to ask, but let's hear about the failures. Or maybe I shouldn't call them failures, but the early businesses are shitty. Like, what were they? We've got guys who start businesses. You know,
we were trying to fix and flip houses. We were trying to start little sales businesses of kinds, whether it was, you know, prepaid phone cards or all sorts of stuff. I mean, anything. Just
your hustlers.
Just trying to make money. One of the businesses that actually did pretty well is when the wireless business was taking off, the wireless business kind of grew in one of the central genesis and kind of growth markets for the wireless business was Seattle. So McCaw Cellular was there, which was the McCaw family. It is, which the genesis of that basically folded into and became AT&T Wireless. VoiceStream was there. VoiceStream became T-Mobile. AirTouch was there, which became Verizon, right? And so I guess three or so of the five largest kind of global wireless providers, the genesis of all those businesses are actually out of Seattle. So when that business was growing, we ended up starting what was called a master agent at the time, which was a fancy word for saying an unemployed sales force, right? So you're an unemployed independent sales force. It is that basically, you know, sold time, sold minutes, sold phones, did activations, that kind of thing. So rather than, you know, your grandma at the mall, hey, do you want to buy a phone kind of a thing? We were setting up Bank of America. It was C-First at the time, but became Bank of America. We're setting up Baugh Construction and PCL and these large distributed workforces it is that had 100 guys or 500 guys in a field, right? So I don't give a shit about your mom at, you know, the mall trying to buy a phone in a case, right? It was, how do we go set this up? And we built a pretty good little business. And so it was me and a guy named Michael, and then it was me and Michael plus 5 plus 10. And we got to about 80 guys it is that were out and doing well and became the biggest master agent in the Pacific Northwest.
Doesn't sound shitty at all. It sounds actually quite
great. No, it was okay. Great. It was okay. But it was a hero to zero business because you got paid on activations. The thing that we should have been doing at the time that would have been smarter, that a couple of guys, they didn't have the volume it is that we have. And they weren't making near as what we were making on activation, but they set their business up differently to where it is that they would get paid on utilization of minutes. Because how long you had your phone
number? Residual.
Right. And so those guys made a shit ton of money. I made a whole bunch of money. It is that I could buy beer and whiskey and weed and a new car and that kind of a thing at the time that you're however old you were, 21, 22 years old, something like that. Right. But it wasn't a business you could sell for really anything. Whatever it is that I did this month, I got to do next month.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of, and
constantly
so
constantly hunting.
Yeah. And you're constantly hunting, which I appreciated the knowledge of going through the time to where it is that you've got to be a killer and a hunter and you're never satisfied and you work and you put this thing on and you keep going and you keep going. Like I like that. But at some point you'd want to be a little bit more strategic and I was too dumb to do that. when my wife and I were early on, there was a point in time to where it is that you're like, you know, this entrepreneurship and business side is a good thing, but it's tough. And I got responsibilities of a wife and we want to have a family. And so maybe I should, I don't know, maybe I should get a job. Because if we're going to have a baby, we should probably get, what's it called? Health insurance.
Yeah.
Right. You know, right. I should probably get like a coat and a tie. I should get one of those little clippy things on my belt to get me into the building because those guys kind of look, you know. So I tried to go get a job and found out that I was a really shitty employee. Right. Like I wasn't a, I was a shitty employee. I mean, I'd come in early, I'd work late, I'd bust my ass, I'd work just like it is that I would work. But like I don't do well with stupid people. Yeah. Like I definitely don't do well with office politics or kissing ass and that kind of a thing. And so when you saw something, it is that was like, I grew up in West Texas, right? When you see bullshit, it's bullshit, right? You know, and people don't necessarily appreciate that when they're your boss, right? So I think I had a dozen jobs in like 2.5 years. Like it, you remember Dumb and Dumber when he comes home and he's like, fell off the jetway again. I was like, I would come home and go, I got fired again. You know, and I was like, okay, great. Awesome. And I'd try something else.
And how old are you at this point?
This is early mid 20s. Joshua was born at 26. So this is probably that 22 to 23 mark ish.
So
24
and,
mark.
So, and let's fast forward just a little bit so that everyone can hear this. So, and now with JB Capital, how much, let's hear some of the stats, some of the more like larger, like, hey, this is how great we're doing.
Yeah. So when JB Capital started, it started by kind of accident and kind of accident to today. Our business originally started as kind of the investment banking advisory side. So, real estate developers, investors, you know, construction guys or otherwise would hire us to go solve problems. Most of them needed differentiated capital. So between 2002 and 2008, I think the first, we probably did $450 million of just kind of direct placements for private capital into those markets. It is for just, you know, not mom and dad with a Home Depot card and a hammer and not Toll Brothers. You know, it was guys that were kind of doing 50 to 500 units a year that needed something different than their idiot banker. They didn't need institutional capital and their rich uncle, you know, that never call them back, right? Like, so now what do I do? Now what do I do? So we got really good at that. We started, you know, our business changed kind of going through 2008 to 2010 when GFC kind of happened. And so for most of those guys, it is that understand real estate's typically, function of the fluidity and liquidity in real estate markets. So when there's liquidity in real estate capital markets, it is real estate's kicking ass. And when there's no liquidity, real estate kind of sucks, right? So at that period of time, right, like all liquidity, it is shut off. Nobody knew what anything was worth. You know, credit markets had kind of shut down. And so our clients at that period of time went from, you know, Bob the builder to Bob the banker. Now you've got these bankers and private equity firms that are invested here. They're saying, I've got $250 million of non-performing assets. I don't know where half of it is. I don't know what any of it's worth. And how do I unscramble scrambled eggs? What do I do with this shit? And so we started now getting exposure, it is, to less of these builders, developers that are always looking for money to do their next thing, to the guys that are thinking more strategically about how it is that they can empower and lubricate these guys' efforts to let them go and have this guy be the workhorse for him making money. And so now you get exposure to that. As that kind of grew and moderated in 2010, we started taking a similar approach to what it is that we were doing early on in real estate and applying that to kind of corporate credit, that there was these growing, burgeoning asset classes of companies it is that were, again, kind of past that friends and family, mom and dad round of raising money, but they just didn't really need institutional Wall Street type money. They didn't need $100 million.
Also, money has a lot of strings and a lot of people overseeing you.
Right. And so collectively, before we started our first funds, we did about $1 billion in transactions over 18 or so years, all debt-driven transactions. So didn't really do private equity, M&A, buy, sell, don't know how to do it, don't want to learn. I mean, I understand it functionally, right? But that wasn't our business. I was really good at structuring capital and structuring debt and just got really good at that.
Great.
That's such a cool niche.
I hope so. My wife hopes so.
I mean, it sounds cool. I mean, I'm curious how you would even go from, you know, hustling cell phone minutes to getting into the type of like raising debt like that.
Yeah.
But I'm more curious.
Do you have any whiskey? I'll tell you the story.
We'll have later. But how, you know, I know that that had to be, especially at first in those initial years when your kids are very young, like you had to still be hustling, busy all the time. You could have easily turned
Nothing's changed. Yeah.
Yeah. How did you manage that? How did you like maintain a relationship with your kids and family and build this business?
Probably poorly. I mean, you...
Well, it sounds like not. I mean...
Well, I mean, you're smarter over time, but, you know, you get smarter by falling on your face, right? Like, I mean, it's kind of that thing about, you know, you can read about doing push-ups all you want. Eventually, you got to get your fat ass in the gym, right? Like, I can read about all the best parent books and all this other kind of a thing, but the ways it is that you learn how to be a good parent is kind of fucking up along the way. And
so failures make you better.
Hopefully. I mean, they should if you're learning from them. I think... two things. I think my wife has been an incredible influence on our house. Because number one, she lets me run. She doesn't bitch when I'm gone. She doesn't bitch when I'm working. She doesn't overhype me when we make a shitload of money, and she doesn't beat me up when we lose a bunch of money. And so she's been awesome. I think the other piece too is that you have examples as a husband and as a father for what it is that you either want or don't want, right? And so everybody's either father or grandfather or mentor or whoever they've had in their life it is that's been that example to them has either said, God, that's what I want to do. I'm going to do that. Or it's the opposite of, I'm going to do the exact opposite of that because that sucked.
If you go back and, you know, this whole, I always have this like, oh, if I could go back and talk to younger me, if you go back, talk to, I'll call it early 20s, you.
Yeah.
What advice would you give?
Oh, great question. How long is this podcast?
Let's just hear it. We can hear it and cut whatever we need.
What advice would I give myself? I think the first thing it is that I would have done is I would have given other people less credit. I think when you're young, you tend to think it is that the guy it is who's made it, whatever that means, right? Or that you look up to in the market or that's in the newspaper or the business journal or whatever the local rag is that's doing what you feel like it is that you want to do. You feel like it is that he's infinitely smarter, more experienced, richer, better looking, blah, 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 than you. And so I think oftentimes it is we give that guy too much credit and we don't give ourselves enough. Mm. Later realizing the fact that is that that guy's on the same road it is that you are. He's just like a couple exits ahead of you, right? So don't discredit yourself. And I think I did that a lot too early, is not giving myself enough credit for what it is that I could do. And when you do that, you don't try early enough. You have to build confidence over time. It is by falling on your face and getting up and getting up and getting up and getting up until you win. And then you're like, okay, that little win gives you something and your little confidence boosted is that maybe I can do this. I wish I would have been dumber sooner. And really run for a couple things. I think not that I did that too late, I did it later than I wanted. Like I wish I would have moved into the fun side of the business 10 years before. That's one of the things that it is I wish I would have done. I mean, obviously looking back, I wish I would have bought more real estate sooner.
I thought you were going to say Bitcoin. That's like, what advice would you give?
Yeah, right.
So, and what about for as a father?
As a father, I feel like I'm doing pretty good. I don't know. I think I've always done pretty good at that. I've had, candidly, a few really bad examples that, you know, it's kind of like, look at that and go opposite. And so I feel like I've done a pretty good job at that. I think the thing it is, if I look now, what could I have done better as a father? I think that I could have been better to my wife earlier. Mm. I mean, ultimately, again, the best thing is that you can do for your kids is love their mother. Because as I'm creating an environment that is for that, then that makes the household safe and good, right? That I think it is. I think I've done a good job of that. I wish I would have done a better job of that earlier.
You know, we're going back to a couple different topics here, but
you know, there was a Jerry Seinfeld quote that came out recently. He said, "Don't try to have your kids grow up in perfect."
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, he goes, if you, because everyone wants to be perfect for their kids, he goes, but the reality is that kids, they need adversity. And just, it's exactly what you said earlier, where you said, you know, the world is not perfect.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have them too sheltered, they're not learning, they're not figuring that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing where, you know, I want to make life as good as I can for my kids. But yeah, there's definitely the big debate that I've got with, which is, you know, how early do we start exposing them to just things?
Right. How old are your kids?
I've got 2 under 3. My son is 2.5. My daughter's 3 months.
Okay.
1 and 4.
1 and 4. Oh, almost so young.
2 and 5 in a few months.
And we joke about this because we have this kind of expectations of, oh, well, I'm going to raise my kids like this. And we have people who have like kids who are older and they're like, we'll pump the brakes.
Mm.
Like, you know, you're going to have your expectations are not.
That's part about this podcast, figuring out.
Yeah.
I'm going to raise my kids.
You know,
getting great advice.
Yeah. I mean, they're young. I mean, right?
Yeah.
Both your kids are under 5 years old, right? So they don't, you know, need to know about the election or anything yet, right? Probably not what it is that they're concerned about at this point. I mean,
yesterday my daughter asked me why boys have penises and girls don't.
Those are the questions you need to ask.
Yeah. I don't even know where to start with this. We have different chromosomes.
Okay.
Awesome. Fundamentally, yeah. You'll learn more about that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm planning on talking to my kids about this super early.
She's already asked me how kids are made twice now, and I gave her the same answer.
I guess I just don't really agree with coddling.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you.
Yeah. When I was a kid.
Unbridled honesty.
Yeah.
My approach.
To a degree. I mean, there's a point to where it is that you're ready for it, right? Just because you're not exposing your kids to something isn't hiding it. It you gotta be in a point of capacity to where it is that you're ready to understand it, right?
Yeah.
So me not telling my you know, kids about my sex life or whatever it is, or you know, how that works or anything like that is not hiding that from my kids. Is that, are they to a point to where it is that they can understand and digest that and it make a difference?
Yeah, is it relevant?
Yeah. And so, not necessarily, and it's a weird thing to say because it's not that you're being dishonest, right? It's what's the relevant impact of sharing that, right? Again, not telling them that is not hiding or being, you know, untruthful. It's
like, I mean, I don't understand it.
No, I totally agree. I mean, there's certain topics where, you know, people want to have a conversation, and I'm not saying your conversation with kids are salacious, but you know, you want to have the information be something that's going to help them make better decisions in their life.
Totally.
And, you know, and that's when you're fine. You know, because as a parent, I go, gosh, you know, I plan on telling my kid about anything, even if it doesn't put me in the best light, to help them have a better life and make better decisions, you know, 100%. But I also just need to make sure that, you know, when those conversations on whatever they are, you know, occur, that, you know, that is something they can actually use that knowledge for. Yeah.
We have, I get a great story about that. You have these stories, it is that you know, want to tell your kids, or you want to get to know your kids, and you're scared to share too much too soon or too late or otherwise, right? And so I think the thing it is that we've learned over time is that your children are your children, but your children are also people, and you can't always look at your children as your children. And so one of the things it is that my wife and I have tried to do and have certainly gotten better of over the years is getting to know our children as people, because your kids are individuals, right? Because everybody knows somebody. We're certainly that. It is of, how do you have 3 kids that in the same home that eat the same dinner and the same parents and the same rules, and they're all so fucking different, and they're, you know, and this kind of a thing, because they're individual people, right? And so one of the things that is that we started just weird. So my eldest son and I were traveling. We were in Las Vegas. Well, a soccer tournament, of course, traveling, and we stay in the team hotel, and the team hotel happened to be on Front Street. It was the Golden Nugget, right?
So Golden Nugget,
high class dog. We're staying at the Golden Nugget, and they had their game for the day. We'd come back, you know, done everything you do, go to the team dinner, and all this kind of thing, and then my son and I are back in the hotel room, and it's like, well, I'm not tired. I mean, neither. And go for a walk. Overwalk. Let's go down the street and see all the crazy stuff. And I said, let's play a game first. And he's like, I'm down. My son's just like that. Cool. What are we doing? Right. He said, I'm down. I said, Let's play the questions game. Okay. What's the questions game? I don't know. I'm kind of making this up as we go. And so I said, here's the rules. You can ask me any five questions it is that you want. There's nothing off limits. I'll tell you 100% of the truth. And it never leaves this room. And I get to do the same to you. And so he was kind of like, okay, let's do it, right? And so, you know, it starts different. So the first question or two are kind of like, you know, softballs. It's not like, what's your favorite color? You know, but it's like, you know, what are you fearful of or most scared of at work or as a dad or with mom or with this? And those are kind of softballs. And then, you know, by question five, it's like, have you ever done cocaine out of a hooker's ass on a Tuesday in Las Vegas? Like, questions get really kind of there, and nothing's off limits, and it's just us, and it's the truth, and I get to ask the same thing of you or your girlfriends or your friends or drugs at school or this, that, or the other thing, and it's here. And it was just an awesome experience. And it let me get to know my son as Joshua, not my son. The secondary benefit to that is my son got to meet me as Jeremy and not as dad. And then we went and walked around Front Street and had the Front Street experience for the rest of the night, which is, if you've been there, you know what to expect. But we've continued that on now for 7 years, I think. And so we'll now do that as a family. That the five of us sit around. The five of us gets to ask each other questions.
Oh, wow.
I've done that individually with my daughter and her long-term boyfriend. About expectations and what things are and that kind of a thing. My kids now do that with their friends. I've had a men's group at my house. It is to where I told them the story about what it is that we did with, or what it is that we did with Joshua and how that is that that's grown. And so taking that and kind of extending that even beyond your children, it worked well with our children because it allowed us to get to know our children as individuals and not whatever. And it gave them a safe environment that it just stays here. And then we extended that on, and my kids now do it with their friends and that kind of a thing. And it just turned out to be really cool.
Mm.
It just turned out to be a really cool deal and experience.
Created a lot of bonding with your son.
Yeah. I mean, I know that I'm my son's best friend. I mean, we're close.
Were any of the questions ones that really make your skin crawl?
No, I'm kind of not. I've been kicked in the balls so many times. It's just like, shit doesn't hurt anymore. Like, nothing really, you know? I mean, nothing really kind of scares you or puts you off anymore.
Did you hear any surprises about your son?
Nothing that would be like, oh,
yeah.
You've tried this, you've done whatever it is. But I mean, it nothing that weirded me out or freaked me out or anything like that, that I was, you know, and there wasn't anything of like, 911, like, whoa, dude, we got to arrest some shit here, right? Like, there was really nothing there of that.
Is this like an annual thing now? Like, every year you...
No, not even... No, I mean, like, this is... I don't know. I mean, we do this probably once a month. Once every 6 weeks or whenever it is that we're inspired. Like, we... I love, like, on my own, just quiet time. Work's done, dinner's done, house is clean, kids are in bed, wife's in bed. And sit up and just freaking have whiskey and cigars or something. And so if Joshua or somebody is out, we'll come out and we'll just sit up till 2 or 3 in the morning and drink whiskey and smoke cigars. And
you know, what sounds great about this story also is that it seems like I use the term like kind of chilling questions, but you know, after the initial questions, it sounds like it just becomes a lot more of a just deeper level experience of knowing someone where you're really getting this.
100% is. There's always the softballs that are still deep questions, but they're easy. Like, I'm sitting down with you and say, okay, you know, outside of your wife and kids, what are the things that is that keep you up at night? You know, there's all these questions it is about the things it is that you know, I know about you, that your wife knows about you, that you know about you. What are the things it is that, you know, you're fearful of when other people look at you? You know, do you ever feel like it is that you're faking it? ever feel like somebody's actually going to realize it is if you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
And imposter syndrome stuff.
You know, I mean, you can go down that rabbit hole. You can go down the rabbit hole of I mean, not even rabbit hole, but just the idea of really getting deep in your questions to uncover who's underneath. That's been fantastic. Just to get to know my kids, get to know my wife better. My wife's a little bit more gun shy on this, right? Because girls are a little bit different. My daughter's okay. My wife, because if we're up and the kids are like, hey, you guys want to do the questions again? All the kids are like, yeah. And my wife's like, you know, right? She's like, I just want to watch Friends, you know, or something, you know. We'll drag her into it, you know. But it's the good part for her too is really getting to know the underneath of things about your kids, because your kids are worried about shit too.
Yeah,
you know, your kids want to talk to you. They want to talk to somebody. They want to know that they're safe. And I don't know. That's been a good thing. It is for us. That's worked.
Well, it sounds like the regularity of it also probably really, even if there is something that's a heavier topic, it's like there's clearly this kind of like safe space that you're able to like bring these things up.
Yeah. And I mean, we started about, because the goals it is that we have for our family, like I definitely want my kids to go and grow and experience and have a shitty boss and get fired and, you know, and do have those types of experience it is for growing and maturing in their business, their profession, their whatever it is that they're wanting to do. But us as a family, you only get to do that for a few years, because the ideal for us is that, you know, your kids get educated, whatever that means, school or not school, I don't care. But then they go work for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and I want you to meet as many people as you can. I want you to make as much money as you can. I want you to make as many connections as you can, have as many experiences as you can. And then when you're 27 or 28 or 29 years old, then you take all of that money, education and connections and experience and life experience and what it is that you've seen, and you bring that back to the family. And then, great, you think that there's, you know, opportunity in, you know, coffee cup manufacturing in Mexico. Yeah, awesome, great. We're going to start a business. I'll fund it. You're going to run it for whatever that is, right? And so with that in mind, our family started about a little less than a year ago having about a quarterly board meeting.
Mm.
So I get up and say, here's where it is that the family is. Here's where all of the kids are. Where our money and savings is and what it is that we're planning on investing in. And here's what it is that we're doing. And tell me what you think I'm missing or what else you think we should be experiencing. Here's why it is that we're doing this. We're working a lot right now. We have transactions it is that make us a lot of money, and we have really shitty cash flow right now. So we've got 9 operating businesses it is. Here's the ones that are performing. Here's the ones that are not performing. We need to do something it is that solves these problems. Here's what it is that I'm thinking.
And so on the financial literacy, you know, you've got the boardroom that you've got kind of set up in last year. And was that a first? I mean, I can't imagine that was the first jaunt for financial education for your kids.
No, not by any means. Yeah, no.
So tell us about that. So when you started these things, because this sounds fantastic. I mean, to have this, I'll call it, you know, community of people who are all, I'll call it rowing in the same direction.
Right. Yeah, mafia.
Mafia.
Yeah, the mafia.
We're going to get little tattoos under our watches, you know, do the skulls type shit for that.
Could be an H for Hill.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We need a crest or a tattoo or something.
Yeah, something good.
It's it really started, like when I was a kid, dad is a whole different story. And so I kind of grew up with my grandfather. And so I grew up with my grandfather. He was an architect and engineering firm in Texas when I grew up. And so I was always on a job site with him. He was going to go to work. I'm going to sit around and watch cartoons all day. I want to go to work with you. And so he'd draft stuff on an old big drafting table and had the little electric eraser. And so he'd draw something and I'd go behind him and erase it. And he'd smack me and then do it right and that kind of thing. We were always on a job site and climbing ladders and going on a job site and wearing a hard hat and kicking dirt and doing that kind of thing. And I loved that. And then so as our businesses started growing and the kids were young or younger, as my son got a little bit older, by the time Joshua was 13, 14-ish, when they were out in the summer, a day a week or so, he'd put on a coat and tie and come to the office with me. And so I'd just take him to meetings with me. And so he'd sit in a room full of bankers and attorneys and we'd be talking about whatever it is that we were talking about at the time. And he'd shake everybody's hands and, you know, he had to keep a little notebook with him and he'd write down everybody's name. Here's Mary the banker and Joe the attorney and Bob did this and blah, 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 and great, whatever it is. And then we'd leave the meeting and I'd say, okay, what did you learn today? He's like, so-and-so's not very smart. so-and-so didn't even talk. Like, why are they there? And then he'd be like, I really liked, you know, whatever it is, this one banker, Andy gal that we worked with forever, was really nice. And she just fell in love with Joshua. She's just like, what a great kid. And so, you know, the next summer they'd do the same thing. And so having him do that kind of set that stage of exposing him to different things. My daughter did it as well. My younger son has not. He's a different character, that one. But, you know, kind of exposing them that way to what it is that we're doing. And then we talk about things that, I mean, we have a family business. So, I mean, we talk about stuff that went on at school and family and this kind of a thing, but we talk about what's going on in the business, right? Because we're in it, you know? And I think that's been good for the kids. I mean, it's been good for them to witness us make a bunch of money and fly around everywhere and go to islands and do all this other kind of stuff. And then they've also seen us get kicked in the fucking mouth and people steal from us, you know? And so, just good experience.
They're all learning lessons.
Yeah. It is, it's all learning lessons for sure. Right. I mean, some lessons, there's a old buddy of mine forever ago used to say, there's some lessons that are free and some cost tuition, you know, and, but they're both lessons. Right. So.
No, I'm, I feel pretty,
where are we
educated?
Where are we at? Yeah. So on the business side, who are people you want to get in contact with you? So you're on LinkedIn, you're very active. And how do people get in contact with you? Who are you looking for?
You know, I'm happy to talk on anything, on business stuff, finance stuff, dad stuff, or problem solving stuff, right? And we get reached out all the time. I mean, you can certainly go to websites, jb-capital.com. You can find us anywhere it is that you want. Phone number and contact details it is are there. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. We're pretty active on LinkedIn and happy to chat with you and meet you there. I do have a thing on LinkedIn for most people. Like, if you reach out, let's connect. I'm not in the business of collecting LinkedIn connections. You know, you send people connections. Don't connect with me if you don't want to connect. Like, if you connect, you're going to get a message from me that says, dude, great to meet you. Love to get to know you. Here's a link to my schedule. Email me directly. Let's spend 15 minutes together this week. Right? Like, I don't want to have a bunch of connections it is that I don't know. If we're going to connect, let's connect. Let's see what I can do to help you.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated your flat honesty on LinkedIn.
Cool.
It was brash and direct, which I kind of appreciate. You know, there's so much on the internet of people trying to kind of describe it as fit a mold, versus instead going, hey, you know, there's 7 billion people on the planet. I just need to find the ones who match me.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what I kind of liked about your LinkedIn.
Appreciate that. Nice.
So we're gonna wrap it up. Jeremy, thanks for being here. Really appreciate you.
I had a great time.
Appreciate
thanks
the honesty
so
on everything.
I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it.